Hi, everybody. My name is Joel, and I am a grateful recovering addict. I love you, Ramon. And I got to tell you, this is awesome being asked, and I got to thank Carlos and Ramon for asking me to speak here at the 10th Florida Symposium, because this symposium is special. It truly is. I moved down here in 2007 with my wife and my son, and literally immediately jumped into service, of course, because I had been in service in New York. And that very first year, I was at Region as an RCM for the Tampa Fun Coast. And the symposium came up. And we moved here in June. In July, I was at the first at our area. And in July, I was at the first region. And I haven't been gone since, except for once in between and once after July when my term was over. September. I missed September. And that's in 17 years, two regions. There was 2 years I didn't serve that I even came up here. I love the Florida region. And I have recovered in two other regions. But this region, there's just something about it, you know. And this symposium is something that I hold dear to my heart, because I actually wear two hats. I am in the field. I've been in the field for over 20 years. And what we do here is incredible. What PR does in the Florida region is incredible. And, you know, Greater New York region is a huge region. And that's where I got clean the first time. But nothing beats this. I remember when I got here, and it was either the second or the third Florida Symposium, and Bob Gray comes over to me, calls me up and says, "Listen, we're having it in Tampa. We don't have anyone to pick anyone up at the airport." And Mark sends me this grid with names and people I don't know. And between myself and Gilbert, we picked everybody up, brought them here, and then took them back. And I got to meet so many people, you know, and I had met a lot of people. I mean, and I'll talk a little bit about my first time around, because that was really the foundation was given to me when I first got here. And unfortunately, I'm not a one white key tag wonder, but I stuck around for 5.5 years, and those people pushed me into service, and service actually kept me clean. I didn't work DNA program that first time around the way it's suggested. And I paid a price for that. But NA service kept me clean for those 5.5 years, because I was sort of pushed into doing everything, many things being voluntold. But also, you know, enjoying it. And believe me, I'm one of these people that will say, you can do service for the wrong reasons. And I did it because I didn't work on ego, image, and pride. And when you do service with that in mind, rather than selfless service, you pay a price, you know, and I did. So I'm going to try and share tonight a little bit about how service has affected and really made my recovery. You know, the NA fellowship, I can't give back enough, because I have a life beyond my wildest dreams. You know, someone would have told me that this is what my life would be like when I first got here. I'd have said, "What kind of dope are you on?" Because it's incredible. And it has nothing to do with material things. It really doesn't. So I'm going to try and eliminate the war stories, because you all know how to use dope and fail at it, because that's why we got here, right? and I'm going to talk about how NA and service for NA has not only improved my recovery, but my life as a whole. Okay. So, as I said, I got clean originally in 1984. Okay. First time I heard about Narcotics Anonymous, I was sitting in Rikers Island, and someone from the Fortune Society came in and heard my story. We were talking, and they were trying to do some social work. And he said, "You need to be in Narcotics Anonymous." Now, in New York City back in 1984, three when I met with this guy, it was a big, dark secret, Narcotics Anonymous. You know, number one, we had, you know, one of the strictest drug laws in the country. And it was also, there was a law in the books that two addicts hanging out together could get arrested. It was illegal, you know. And I remember when I finally got to the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous in 1984, probation officers, and I got clean on St. Mark's Place. The probation officers and the police would stand across the street and watch who was coming in and out. But they didn't bother us because they knew that we were there for the right reasons, which was really cool, you know? And when I got there, I met some people who truly believed, and it was a very small fellowship. And like I said, you couldn't even do 90 meetings in 90 days in the five boroughs of New York City. Okay. You had to go one day a week, either on the Long Island Railroad or find someone with a car, because most of us didn't have a car, out to Long Island or up to Westchester on the Hudson Line. And to be able to do a 90 and 90, because there was one day a week that there was no meetings in any one of the five boroughs. Okay. And we got really, really close, because if someone did have a car, everyone would pile in. And when you got to where you were going to the meeting, number one, we talked, we fellowship, you'd open the car and it was like the Volkswagen in the circus. One person would come out, two people would come. There, 12 people would come out of a Volkswagen. I mean, how did you do that? Well, we did, you know, but we also got very close. And we also, it was all of us that were in that car pretty much did service of some kind. Okay. So I was taught to do service by the time I had 90 days clean. And I just tell you this one story. At 90 days clean, God bless him, Santos took me to a medical prison that doesn't exist anymore up on Madison Avenue. Okay. And the gate, the Sally Port opened and the gate closed, and I almost shit in my pants. I'd never been in a Sally Port and been allowed out on the same day. That didn't exist, you know? And believe me, Rikers Island knew me by name, and, you know, I went in and out of there like it was my own home at one point. And I went up there, I spoke. And when I went out, whew, number one is I felt really like I really went in and out on the same day. You know, it was amazing to me. And I felt so good. And I felt so good because I felt like I touched someone, you know. And H and I became a passion of mine for a while until I got involved in public relations. And to see what the fellowship is today versus what it was then is absolutely incredible. You know, I can't tell you, it's mind blowing. And and it's funny, it's almost like a full turn. I'm on the RSO's board right now. Well, in 1986, in the greater New York region, we had our helpline and we had a certain amount of literature there. And we called the World Service Office and we said, how do we become incorporated? And eventually Bob Stone, if any of you have been around long enough, remember that name. He came to New York a couple of times, helped us get it together. And I was on the first board of directors of the Greater New York Regional Service Office. And some of those people aren't around anymore, but that was groundbreaking. It really was. And that regional service office is still there. And it's one of the few that's still there after all of these years, which is really cool. And so, like I said, I was doing service at a meeting called Midnight Miracles. I sort of took it hostage, again, ego, image, and pride. It was the biggest meeting in New York City. People came to the Howl Club upstairs, which was probably the only clean club in New York City. And downstairs at midnight on Friday and Saturday, there was this meeting. And the meeting had windows that went to the street. And we had speakers in the windows and people, there'd be addicts out in the street listening to it. So, of course, this was, you know, my ego talking. And I pretty much took it hostage, you know, because everybody saw Joel, right? Well, 5.5 years down the line, that ego, image, and pride took a toll. I started moving away. I thought I knew it all. I actually thought I was going to become a millionaire because I wasn't using. I was going to go up to the neighborhood and sling dope. Well, as my sponsor said when I came back, how did that work for you? Well, I can tell you this. I came back in the rooms in May 8th, 1998, sitting in prison, not knowing if I was ever going to get out of prison because I had 5 felonies with L's on the back. And within 13 months of thinking I was going to become a millionaire, I was sitting in prison, you know, and that was rough. However, on May 8th, 1998, 4 days after my father died and 4 days of literally trying to kill myself, getting as much dope as I could in prison to overdose. And when I sat there on May 8th thinking, I can't even fucking do this right. You know, I'm still here. So I cut the sheet and a CEO walked by. And this is HP. There's no two ways about it. And he pulls the cord. They take me down. I'm in Clinton Danamora. So there's a hospital in that prison. And the triage nurse is one of us. And we started talking. And we started talking about my time in the fellowship and how NA doesn't just stand for Narcotics Anonymous, but it stands for Never Alone. Because I was sitting in that prison cell thinking I'm all alone. My mother had died just before I got in there. My father died 4 days earlier, and my kids wouldn't talk to me. I hadn't spoken to my kid in 7 years at that point. And we talked. And there was a 60 inmate waiting list to get to an AA meeting that was in that facility. And that nurse got me there that night, May 8th, 1998, and I haven't used since. And that is God. I have no doubt about it. Because left to my own devices, if I was still alive, I'd probably have a needle in my arm. And that's facts, you know? However, you guys taught me how to stay clean one day at a time, despite this diseased brain of mine. And most of my sponsees, in fact, all of my sponsees and most people that know me know that I say the opposite of active addiction is connection. Because without you, I can't do this. And I found that out even when I wasn't working the program the way it was suggested. So I am grateful to the program, the 12 steps that have most of the answers in it, but without the fellowship, I'm lost. I'm lost. So that's why I need you. And where I got that connection and where I have found most of the people that really have made an influence in my recovery when things were really tough was doing service. Because somehow or another, when I do service and when I give back, number one, I'm doing more for me than I may be doing for the service for the people that I'm doing. Because when I walk out of whatever service commitment I do, I feel good about me. And I can tell you this, when I first came into these rooms, I couldn't look at myself in the mirror because I didn't like what was looking back at me. And it took 2 years after I came back in the rooms to finally really like who was looking back at me. And at that point, I had been released from prison, another God thing, because of an appeal. And they wanted to send me to New York City, which is where I had 3 of the felonies that I had caught, or to Fishkill, which was in halfway upstate New York, and do work release. And I had no, my mom was dead. My father was dead. They were giving me $100 and a bus ticket. And I said, you're not sending me back there. You send me back there, I'm throwing another brick and I'll be right back in here. I said, I need some help. And I had about almost 2 years clean by that point when they were ready to release me. So I turned around and I I refused program. And back then, if you refused program, you went to the box. So they sent me to the box. And I'm in the box for about, in Fishkill, it was one of the new S-block jail prisons. And you're 1 hour out is in the cage behind your cell. You don't see anybody. Your food is shift is the trustee pushes it under the door. And I'm in there for about an hour, and all of a sudden I hear the Sally port open. I go, what? And a lady by the name of Miss Jacobson, who at one time was my counselor in work release in New York City. And she was the head of work release up in Fishkill. And she said, Joel, what are you doing here? I saw your name. You were supposed to be with us. I said, I can't do you. I can't do work release. It's not going to work unless you send me to a work release program that's run by a certain person up in Albany. And 12-step based. I had gotten some clean time under my belt. And she said, say yes to work release. Come to the housing unit for work release. I'll get you there. And within an hour, she had the guy on the phone that ran it. And within 30 days, I was up at Hudson Correctional Facility getting ready to go to this work release facility, which was a work release facility that it was all based on 12 steps. You had to go to meetings. You did 30 days of treatment. And then it was like, get into the community, get a job, and get both feet planted in the rooms of whichever fellowship you felt you belonged into. And of course, Narcotics Anonymous has always been close to my heart from the very first time I got here because of that whole family and commitment thing that I told you I had. And in this program, I decided, and this is how service has really affected not only my recovery, but my life. One of the first things they told us to do was to do some service. Okay. I'm in this work release program 2 days. And a guy by, if you're from the New York area, you might know the name, went by JB. And he came over and he said, you're coming over to for the Berkshires today. You're going to talk to some juveniles. And then after that, you're going to this place, the prison families in New York. And you're going to help these families understand how the prison system works and how they can maneuver to see their loved ones. And I did it. And lo and behold, after two failed marriages, because and today I know it's because of my self-centered thinking and the way I thought a marriage should be, that they were failed. At that very first meeting, I meet my wife, who I'm married to for over 22 years now. I learned that here. I learned that from you. Because I didn't know how to be a husband. I didn't know how to be a father. I learned that from you. And when I tell you earlier that my life is beyond my wildest dreams, and it has nothing to do with material things, it has to do with things like that. I got a son that's in college. It's 21 years old. He's never seen me high. And I told you, I have a child that didn't talk to me for 7 years when I went to prison. You know, it's incredible, the feelings and the emotions that I get to feel today, the good ones as well as the bad ones. I'll tell you something else that happened with service. I ended up getting into the field, like I said. And my wife, who I met at Prison Families of New York, was working at a hospital-based program in administration. And they had a employee's assistance to go back to school. And this is another thing. You can't make these stories up. Miracles happen in Narcotics Anonymous. In 1972, I graduated from high school. My graduation was in a building in Central Park with glass around it. Everybody was walking or tavern on the green. walking across the stage. I was sitting outside tripping. The reason I got my high school diploma was my assistant principal was a customer of mine. I was selling dope. I gave him a half pound of pot, and guess what? I had a high school diploma, right? What I did with it for a while was basically nothing, because I did go to college to avoid certain situations, and I majored in sex, drugs, and rock and roll and gambling, right? My disease just took off. And so shooting back up to New York and getting out of prison, I wanted to help people. So I got a job, thanks to my wife, at the halfway house up there. They called it a halfway house. It's really a supportive living program in New York. We call that down here. And I was the first one that was allowed to work overnights in that work release program, because it was in treatment. And I also was the first one in that program that was allowed to go back to school. And I got my associate's degree. Okay. I couldn't pass high school if it weren't for the dope. I got my associate's degree. I then went on and got my bachelor's degree. I got my KSAC in New York and became a therapist. I started there as a BHT. I left there before we moved to Florida. I was the discharge planner. I had an office of my own for going to school. I came down here and I got my master's degree, my LMHC, and this past August, I am now a doctor. That wouldn't have happened without you. That happened because of Narcotics Anonymous. Okay? I was the bad boy in school. I was down in the principal's office all the time. And the crazy thing about it is, I just registered to do another doctorate this past week. Because I want to learn. I want to learn how to help people more than I am. And the funny thing about it is, a couple of years ago, I said, I'm going to retire. And he's laughing because he keeps telling me I ain't retired. And so I left. I had worked in a treatment facility. My last job in a treatment facility was 5 years as a clinical director at Seven Summit Pathways. And I was done. I went home. I sat home for 6 weeks and I went batshit crazy. And I went and got an office 3 miles from my house, and I'm in private practice now. And I love it. I come and go as I please. I get to go on vacations when I want to go, but I'm still helping people, you know, and that's the key. Now, as I said, you know, that's helped me in my life. But I think one of the greatest things that ever happened to me, and again, only happens in Narcotics Anonymous, was I was about 5.5 years clean and my wife and I lost a son. It was the one and only time, I think, that I really, really wanted to use. And you know how we don't have phone numbers of our dealers anymore? This insidious disease had me remember that phone number of the dealer just like that. Now, it probably didn't exist anymore because he was probably in prison somewhere, but I remembered it in a minute. My wife and I, both of us called our sponsors. And within a half hour, that hospital room was filled with nothing but addicts in recovery. And for the next 4 or 5 months, they didn't leave us alone. There was always someone in our house because we were in pain. And, you know, there's something really interesting about this is that about that 5th month, there was someone that I worked with in that facility that we worked in New York. It was a hospital-based facility. And it was a guy with about 40 years clean in the AA fellowship, and he had lost a daughter. And he sat me down. He saw the pain I was in. And he said, if you don't stop asking God why, the pain ain't going to go away. And he explained to me, if you stop asking God why, you're not going to forget. It's going to be like an open wound, okay? It's going to be like the open wound, and it's going to slowly heal, and there'll be a scab on it, and then you'll pull it off, and the pain will come back, and eventually there'll be a scar there. so you'll never forget. But you got to stop asking God why. And the reason why I say that was a really important moment in my life was when I got here in 1984, my second meeting outside of a facility, there was a lady by the name of Fran O. And people from New York probably all know that name. It's just smiles. And she got up on it was my second meeting. I was angry at God. I didn't want to have anything to do with God. It was God's fault I had to be here, right? I was still in total denial. I just knew I wanted to stay clean so I didn't have to go back to prison. And she says, she opens up her first words out of her mouth. There's only two things you have to do. Don't pick up and find a higher power. I'm like, oh, shit. So after the meeting, I go up to her. This is down on St. Mark's Place. And I said, I get the don't use, but a higher power. I was raised by survivors of the Holocaust. And it just, the Jewish God that I knew was a punishing God, and I didn't want anything to do with it. And she handed me two pieces of paper. And she said, you write down tonight every time you could have been killed when you were out there. And then bring it back to me tomorrow. Next day at 3 o'clock on St. Mark's Place, there she is. I hand it to her. She said, did you read this? I said, I wrote it, and then I read it. Yeah. She says, now tell me you don't have a higher power watching out for you when you weren't watching out for yourself. Fuck me up. She was right. So when that guy told me I needed to stop asking God why, I realized that all that stuff she had told me went right out the window when my son died. And I said, holy shit, how quickly that happens. So from that point on, not only was I working in the field, I became, I don't like the word service junkie, but there isn't much I didn't do. So in New York, I went back into public relations and H&I. And between those two things, I worked really, really hard. And what a rewarding thing it was. There are five hubs in New York State for the prison system. And the one hub right around Albany, New York, the capital, 10 years before I got there, someone tried to bring some dope into the prison and NA was not allowed in there anymore. So myself and this guy, who is an extremely close friend, him and his wife, of me and Cheryl's, Sean M., I don't know if anyone knows him, decided we were going to try and get back into the prison system. And we're in Albany anyway, and we tried to contact the head of volunteer services. She came over to Sean's house and we sat there and talked to her. And we got into the prison system. So one of the things that really impressed me about that, and we went to the prisons and we shared, and the thought of going into prisons was like really incredible to me. So when I came down here, one of the first things someone asked me was, a guy by the name of Russ, would you go into Hillsborough County Jail with me? 2.5 years, I didn't stop going in every Sunday. You know, and one of the things I was told when I was, you know, when I was in the rooms the first time with service was, service is not supposed to be convenient. You do a service commitment, you do it because it's given back. And I did, and I am not, I'm like Ramon was in his first year, 25 years clean. I still don't like to get up in the fucking morning. I was up and in Hillsborough County Jail, at 9 o'clock every single Sunday. Okay. And I did that. Like I said, I was at Region, and from Region, I turned around and I, in 2009, we changed the service structure. And when I say I have made friends, like I said, in service, Sean, people that I was on the board with in New York at the time, there aren't too many of them that are alive anymore. One of the guys that came to the facility that I was at back then John Kay, he picked me up the morning of my release and took me to my meeting, my first meeting down in at St. Mark's Place. You know, that man until the day he died was, I was close to him. In fact, Fran, after my relapse and I went to Hawaii to the World Convention, she was doing the meeting, Aging and Recovery. Okay. And I'm sitting there in front with the girl that I did PI with. That's what it was called back then, not PR. Okay. In the front row. And she looks at me and she stops sharing. And I said, you know, I'm Kristen. And okay. After the meeting was over, she comes over to me. She says, I thought you were dead. Because everybody knew when I had relapsed, I went out there and I didn't pick up where I left off. I picked up as if I was using throughout those whole 5.5 years that I was in these rooms, because my disease came to the meetings with me. So I can't tell you, I was a dead man walking. And people, when they saw me come back, who had known me from before, went, whoa. Now, I don't know if anyone feels the way I do, but it's a miracle that I'm still alive, never mind doing service, married, have a kid, you know? And the same goes for all the service I did here. So some of the not so nice things that have happened in recovery, I got through the connection of people that I met in service. And I can tell you this Florida region has a lot to do with it. My wife's got Parkinson's. She's had 2 brain surgeries. I don't know how many people here know Ron. I know there's some that do. And Sandy had just passed away from brain surgery. Cheryl went through her first brain surgery. And I couldn't tell her how freaked out I was. I was freaking out. Ron called me for the week before her surgery till about 2 weeks after the surgery, every single day. I can't pay him back, but that's what we do here. That's what we do here in Narcotics Anonymous. You know, I can tell you that there are things that has happened to me that I just, you know, I could keep you here until tomorrow telling you some of these stories, you know. One of the things that I know about service and connection also is we don't all have to agree with each other. We bump heads. Mark can tell you about that. But at the end of the day, and Bob Gray, one day when I sort of bumped heads, I guess, he said to me, you understand that there is nobody in this fellowship that does service, especially at this level, that wants anything but the best for Narcotics Anonymous. But we don't have to agree. We can learn to agree to disagree and then hug at the end of the day. And that's what we do. And I will never forget when we changed service structures and I ended up being a PR chair, PR resource coordinator, and Mark was fellowship development. I said, I don't know if I can do this. And I had to tell you something. I know that I can go to Mark for anything if I need it, because that's just who we are, you know? And over the years, I've realized that, you know what? We may not have agreed on a lot of things, but we all wanted the same outcome. And that's what's best for Narcotics Anonymous. Connection. And I will say this all the way around the rooms. You know, Ramon talked about the connection we made by traveling. I was never so thrilled when I found out Carlos was going to be his AD, because Carlos and I over the last 10 years, either he has had a situation first or I have had a situation first. And then the one who had the situation afterwards could call each other. And we have done that not once, not twice, but 3 or 4 times, you know. I don't know about anyone else, but when I was using and I was active, people would see me come and they'd cross the street, you know? Today, I have people I can call at 3 o'clock in the morning if I'm stuck. Thank goodness that hasn't happened in a long, long time. But I know that I can do it. I have some friends right now, and unfortunately, as we get older, and they told us that, you know, I was told this a long time ago, the longer you stay in recovery, the more people you're going to bury. And in the last year, we buried quite a few of them, you know. My sponsor right now, and I don't know how many of you know Trey, but he's extremely athletic, rides bicycles from one end of the country to the other, and all of a sudden, about 2 months ago, he couldn't breathe. Went in the hospital, and he's got pulmonary fibrosis, and he's been denied transplants from two different hospitals already. And all we can do is pray, you know? I speak to Ron every once in a while. We text all the time. But those are the connections. Those are the friendships. Those are the things that I can't even put into words about how valuable those things are, you know? I know that coming here, shit, how much time do I have? I'm still good? Okay. I know that the one thing that I have here in Narcotics Anonymous is that whatever I go through, I don't have to go through it alone, you know? Like I said, it just amazes me the stuff that I have been able to go through with the help of you guys without picking up. Because when I think about it, my one and only coping skill before I got here was go use, right? And today I got all of you. One of the greatest experiences that I have ever had, I'm going to cry, was when Ramon and I went to the World Service Conference last year. And I got to tell you something, to see literally bitter enemies, politically, geographically, sit side by side, working together to find a new path for Narcotics Anonymous after the pandemic was absolutely amazing. I mean, bitter enemies politically, geographically, working together at the same round table that I was at. It was unbelievable. And like I said, I've experienced a lot of stuff. While I was using, I was in the entertainment field. I've done a lot of things in my life, but that experience topped them all. That was incredible. And if anyone here ever gets a chance to go to the World Service Conference in person, wow, you're in for an experience that can't be put into words, you know? And I got you guys to thank for it because you trusted me to be a trusted servant of this region. And I can't thank you guys enough for that. So I want to close with this. And it's a story that I've told a number of times in the past. Cheryl and I in New York went to a wedding one day. And the guy that held the wedding told this story about how a marriage should be. But you see, the first thing I thought of when I heard that was that's what Narcotics Anonymous is. And the story he told was that someone went up, you know, died, went up St. Peter at the gate. And he said, are you going to heaven or hell? Looked at him, I said, I don't know. He says, let me take you for a walk. And he opens up these two big doors. And there's this long table with food. And the people are weeping because they can't get, they've got these big ladles on their arms. They can't get the ladles to go to their mouth, and they're crying and they're starving and they're suffering, right? And then he takes them all the way to the other end of that room, and there's another set of doors. And he opens up those doors. And there's a table just like the one in the first room. people with ladles attached to their arms, and they're feeding each other. That's what we do. Thanks for letting me share.